Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan, Nick, Weiss, here with you once again. Before we get into it, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. All right, gentlemen, we're here. It's 11:31, Sunday evening. After what I can only describe as the second worst Giants loss that I have witnessed in my 32 years of life. Number one, obviously, being the Matt Dodge, DeSean Jackson game. This is up there. You know, it was one of those games where I'm sitting on my couch, still thinking about it during the Sunday night football game, unable to move, paralyzed by my overwhelming emotion or my total apathy, still trying to figure out what's going on inside my brain. The New York Giants allowing 33 points to the Denver Broncos in the fourth quarter. Just one quarter. The Denver Broncos 33 fourth quarter points were the most points in the fourth quarter by any team that had been shut out in the first three quarters in NFL history. Absolutely dreadful, painful, embarrassing. I'm sort of out of adjectives to describe it. I think the one that all three of us would agree on and most of our listeners would agree on, avoidable. As was the Cowboys loss, as were maybe one or two other losses earlier in the season. Avoidable losses that we'll get into a lot of the decision-making from the coaching staff, from the general manager, from the other higher-ups, but completely and totally avoidable loss. And here we are now, 2-5, going to face a probably pissed off Eagles team next week, Sunday, 1 o'clock. Gentlemen, how we doing? Why? So you got like the Kenny from South Park thing going on. You're pulling your hoodie strings closed out of pain or embarrassment, one of the two.
I want to like somehow strangle myself with my hoodie string. But yeah, you brought up the Philly game with DeSean's action. It was also a game, I think it was 2006, up 24-0 against the Titans. Matthias Kiwanuka wraps up Vince Young and lets him go. Then Giants end up losing that game too. This is real devastating, real heartbreaking. Just because, you know, given the stakes with the young quarterback going against this defense, he has the performance that he has, put you in position to win games. You dominate for three quarters coming off the Philly game. You're really thinking that, you know, things are changing. There's a culture shift that's happening. We talked about that last week about, you know, it's just a different feeling with this team. But then, you know, they just do it again. They create another way to lose a game. A game they were up 19-0 entering the fourth quarter. They were up 26-8 with, I think, you know, 10 minutes to go. They were up 33-32 with, you know, 30 seconds to go. And somehow, some way, here we are again. And the most frustrating and the most mind-boggling thing about it all is the fact that they lost this game, or some the reasons why they lost this game was the same reasons why they lost two or three games previous early in the season, why they lost multiple games over the course of the last 2-3 years. Simple, you know, football 101, roster management 101, coaching management 101 mistakes. And we can talk about the defense in the fourth quarter. We can talk about the fact that they don't have a professional kicker on their roster. We can talk about the situation they put their young quarterback in late in that game with the play calling. But this all boils down to the fact that this coaching staff, this regime as a whole, can't do the easy things right. And it has now cost them another game. I think this probably closes the book on any chance of them making some serious noise. I think they'll still be competitive because of how good Jackson Dart has looked. But I mean, it's just sickening. It's just really like you. They kick you in the nuts and then they stand you back up and they kick you in the nuts again. And it's like, holy crap. Actually, I think the best way to describe it is they kick you in the nuts, they stand you up and give you the best hand job you've ever had, and then they kick you in the nuts right again. And that's exactly
I would say it's accurate because, again, this is just the effect that Jackson Dart has on not just the team, but as me as a fan. I'm not going to speak for everyone else, but I have a feeling that many others feel the same way. I did not think the Giants were losing this game until they missed the extra point.
I agree with you 100%.
As soon as they missed the extra point, I knew it was over.
Oh,
until
I knew
that moment.
I was worried. Yeah. The first extra point, I was like, fuck, that's going to come back and bite us at some point. And you get two in one game. That's just that. Like you said, that's not a professional NFL.
Nick, it's not even just two. It's a full, I guess you'd call it a 4-point swing, because then they go for two. So at some point in the middle of the game, because they missed the extra point, they don't convert that. And then they miss the extra point at the end of the game. This shit has cascading effects throughout the course of the game that just drives you fucking crazy. Absolutely crazy. I mean, do we want to start with the kick?
No. Yes.
Roster management. We could talk about it from a roster management perspective as opposed to.
Let's just talk about the kicking position and it goes back to the summer, right? So Graham Gano, right? Like, he's getting up there in age, and it's like, okay, you know, you're confident in him that he's gonna, you know, have a bounce back year at age 38, given the injuries that he had last year. Okay, fine. And let's be real. Like, Graham Gano made some good field goals early in the season. He was hitting like 50, 55 yarders, whatever. But the problem is, and this is the thing that's mind-boggling to me, is that during the summer when I was there, they don't kick field goals. Like, they don't. Like, they would run 11-on-11 drills, guys. Like, they run like these two-minute drills where it's like you put the ball at the midfield and then you have to get into field goal range. They do these drills, and then when they get there, they don't kick field goals. Jude Macatamia didn't kick field goals. Graham Gano didn't kick field goals. So there was no real competition there, right? There was no sign of like, okay, Jude can possibly step in there. In the preseason, Jude didn't really kick. I don't remember if he had any field goals. Then the season starts, and then there's the fiasco with the Kansas City game, which is like, okay, that happened again. And then it's like you sign Younghoe Koo, and then you say, well, Jude Macatamia won the competition. Well, what competition was that? And we don't know what competition there was. But okay, he wins the kicking job. Then, you know, you get by the Chargers game. I think he only attempted one field goal or one extra point. I don't remember exactly or what exactly it was. The next week, or 2 weeks later against the Eagles, he missed an extra point. He missed an extra point. And then today, he misses two extra points. And then on one of them, after you score a touchdown, you don't have confidence in him that you can make an extra point. You go for the 2-point conversion. Again, leaves a point on the board. But this is the most eye-popping thing to me, right? And I had to go back and actually look at this. The Giants had two drives in the first half that got to the inside the Denver 45. I think one ended at the 41, the other ended at the 42. The way they were calling plays when they got down there was not of a team that's like, let's get a little bit closer, like inside the 40 or, you know, close to the 40-yard line so we can kick a 56, 57, 58-yarder. It was like, oh, no, we have to extend this drive. We have to get a first down. They don't have confidence.
And it's not only – it's
over 50 yards.
It's not only that. This is 56, 57, 58-yarders with no wind altitude.
In Denver.
This is like, you look around the league, and I feel like there's kickers that fall into three different categories. There is, like – the savvy veteran who just, you know, okay, he's great. He's automatic. He's been on the team for 7-8 years. Like, you throw him out there in any situation, right? Like a Harrison Butker type before the allegations and his demise, Justin Tucker, like those kind of guys, right? Just like good veterans. Your team understands their value. They keep them around. The next category of guys are the guys that they're okay. Like, you know, you could probably trust them from 50, but like,
the 1-year deal guys.
Not even the
guys who rotate. You know, like, they go from team to team. Rotate. They hang around.
Like I just pointed out on Twitter, that Eddie Pinheiro and Jake Moody just did a little fucking flip flop, and they're both fine. They're both hitting routinely from 50 plus. There's no like, oh man, like, I don't know if he's going to hit that right. Like just whatever. Like that's the Younghoe Koo. Like okay, he was a great solid kicker in Atlanta for a long time. He got the yips. He changed teams. You have to fucking use them. And then there's a third category of guys, which I'm still waiting for them to find out. And it's the weirdos, the soccer players, the fucking like sexually ambiguous. I'm a coder for a tech company, but I played rec league soccer. And my wife on the couch one day watching NFL Red Zone said, oh, why don't you give that a try? And these fucking bionic freaks are hitting from 70 fucking plus. No problem. Okay. The Aubreys of the world. I think the Lions now have a guy like that.
Yeah, Bates.
The Giants have done none of the three. They went halfway to the second category by bringing in Young Wei Koo, but there is a mental aspect to this. I don't care that I'm not even going to pronounce his last name because he's not even going to be on the team next week. Jude, okay, never kicked in the NFL before. He's some project Irish guy.
He lost his job at Rutgers.
Nick, the only reason he stayed on the team at Rutgers is because of some international exemption. He was a DEI kicker. He was a DEI kicker for Rutgers University.
That's why he's on the Giants.
It wasn't even the starter.
Same thing with the Giants. He's like part of like the international pathway thing.
Right.
And he doesn't count against the roster, which is why they have
like claim that, you know, oh yeah, he's got a great leg. He's got this fucking video on his Twitter of him kicking a 65 yarder indoors barefoot. That's great. Can you do it in a game? Clearly not.
He's never even attempted a 40-yard field goal, let alone a 50-yard field goal.
No, the last 2 weeks, the New York Giants have attempted zero field goals and have missed three extra points. That's insane.
And that's
in games in which they're scoring 30-plus.
And that's a general manager's decision. Because, like, we can say, well, the coach – no. If you brought Koo in, play him. Like last year when they brought Cade York in on the tryout and like he was like trying out on the plane or whatever, like, okay, you brought a guy in here. You know this guy can't kick.
Cade York is a free agent, by the way. I looked that up today too.
Bring in as many guys as you can.
Like this is a GM decision. Like let's not pretend the GM has no control over roster. We've seen him have control over the roster all season long.
We've all seen Moneyball. You can't play Pena at first base tonight. He's not on the team anymore. You can't play this guy. He's not on the roster.
If he's a kicker, why doesn't he kick good?
I mean, exactly.
But this is so easy. Like the Bills, their kicker got hurt at the beginning of the season, and they put him on IR, and they signed like 46-year-old Matt Prater, like just randomly.
And he's
like 9 of 10 on field goals. And he kicked the game winner against the Ravens in week one. This is not hard. This is easy.
And kicker is different. Kicker is different from the other positions. You can call up five guys and have five kickers at your facility the next day, run them through a tryout, and you don't have to worry about scheme. You don't have to worry about fit. Can he learn? No. Can he kick the ball through the uprights from 50 and in? I'm not even saying more than 50. Bring in a semi-professional, competent NFL kicker who can hit from 50 and in. I'm not asking for anything. Give me the Jay Feely special. 50 or less, and we're golden. That's all I need.
Here's the thing. If Young Wei Koo, their words, lost a kicking battle to Jude McAtain, whatever his name is.
You're not going to need to know it.
And Jude, you're not confident in that can make 50-yard field goals or 45-yard field goals. Then go get somebody that can. This is why this whole like kicking competition that they claim Jude won doesn't make
sense. Farce.
Because they're not confident he can make field goals. They weren't confident he can make extra points today. They went for two. Like this isn't hard. It's not supposed to be this hard.
And this is multi-layer failure, too. This is not just the general manager. This is everybody. This is the general manager, the coach, and the roster.
This is not even like – so this there's the game day roster management decision, right? That's a collective effort. And then it's like, wait, who did you try out? Who did you sign? What are you saying, Young Wei Koo? Like, what? This doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And, yes, it is like a fireable offense because you've now lost multiple games – in year four of like you're supposed
in multiple to seasons, yes. Multiple times the kicker spot has lost them two or three games in a given season, 3 years in a row now, where Gano can't stay healthy or he plays injured, he loses them the game. Then they bring in somebody who cannot kick, and we are back to square one. It is laughable. This is not quarterback. There are 10 Division I kickers who are not on teams right now who graduated from school last year, who can hit from 40 or less. I'm not find asking a soccer for player. Crazy.
That's the meta. That's the new meta. Like, go find a fucking soccer player. Even like these D1 kickers. Like, how many are they? Like, you know, I watch a lot of college football. you know, I pay attention to what the, you know, the field goal marker is in crucial situations. If a lot of these guys, like, it's not even that far. It's like, oh, their career long is 52. You know, I think like what Louisville's got a great kicker or USC or something. I don't know.
Greg Zuerlein's a free agent, right? Cade York is a free agent. You know, like there's so many guys that are. I think Dustin Hopkins is a free agent. Like these are just veteran kickers that are like.
Nick Folk is 50 years old and kicking for the Jets.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not this hard.
Yes,
it's really not.
Matt Prater's like.
Is Randy Bullock on a team?
No, he's available too. Like they're
fat. Like Randy.
It's insane to me that we are in this situation like again.
Yeah, Gano can't be on the team next year. Period. He can't be on the team next year. He's done.
Best kicker in Giants history. It's over. Yeah. It's over.
All right. Anything else on the kicker outside of the fact that they continue to just botch the easiest thing in the world?
No, not on the kicker. But is Shane Bowen fired tomorrow morning?
So let's talk about
he should be, but no.
Let's talk about Shane Bowen for a second, because this is another thing of like coaching.
You know who also talked about Shane Bowen for a second?
Brian Burns.
Brian Burns.
Did you guys see that his press?
Like, yes.
He was putting like lotion on, and yeah. he was like so yeah. mad that he put the lotion away, but forgot he didn't put it on his face. look, man, this has sort of been building for like a couple weeks now, and like. There was
probably longer.
Yeah, there were signs
since the end of last season.
I'm talking about like they're like vocally, like publicly talking about
it. No,
like,
I know.
Yeah, like last week against the Eagles, like it kind of went under the radar because of what happened last week and how they won. But like Dexter Lawrence and Kayvon Thibodeau after the game sort of came out. I was like, yeah, we were on his ass. So like there has been like tension between the players and the coaches for some time. They are now more openly talking about it. And then today – again, I just don't know what – like, it shouldn't be this hard, right? Like, you're playing prevent defense, and you're dropping guys back, and there's still enough time left. In the NFL today where kickers make 55-yard field goals in their sleep, and you're just giving them 30-yard chunk plays when they're starting at the 30-yard line. Like – bring pressure. Bo Nix struggles under pressure. It doesn't make sense.
Brian Burns should never be dropping in coverage ever.
It doesn't make sense. Like it's very simple, right? You do push them to the middle of the field, but in the middle of the field, you don't give them this cushion where they can get 20-yard chunk plays, and they get it. And yeah, there was some poor execution, like Drew Phillips. I don't know. I went back and looked at the play. I don't even know if that ball was supposed to go to Marvin Mims, but it somehow landed it. Like
I thought that same thing in real time.
Yeah, but my point is like you don't play that, and then
there was another one on the right sideline where it was like a back shoulder, maybe it was underthrown, and he just totally had no idea where it was.
Are you on that same drive?
Yeah, I think so.
That was the Deontay Banks play, which we'll talk about Deontay Banks too.
Okay, that was I'm still fixated on the run coverage.
Yeah,
on the bonus rushing like, touchdown,
and we are starting to see, and this is where like Brian Daboll. I think he's still coaching for his job because I think a lot of him, his future is going to be tied to the quarterback, even though it shouldn't be because there's evidence that he's not somebody that can be a good head coach. But I think he's tied to that, whether we agree or not, whether we agree that should be the case or not, that's what it is. But you got to be careful, dude, because there are players on this defense that are now vocally calling out the coaching on the defense, and that's going to be a problem. And especially a guy like Brian Burns, who I think we can all agree has been their best defensive player
this hands year, down
was playing at an all-pro level.
Again, this is like back-to-back years now, by the way, where we're in now week seven is now over. At this point last year, if you guys remember, Dexter Lawrence was a defensive player of the year candidate.
Yep.
And then he was just, regardless of whether or not that production kept up after, you know, he had gotten his elbow injury, he would never have gotten it because the team was so bad. The same thing is happening with Brian Burns. Like, he is on pace for, what, 20 sacks, over 20 sacks?
Like, I think he has 9.5 sacks so far this season.
There you go. So, over 20. He'd be prime defensive player of the year candidate had the Giants not, as you put it, Weiss, fucked up the easy stuff. They'd have two more wins right now.
Maybe more.
They could be probably playing for three. The division next week if they had they won the games.
Genuinely could have.
I mean, this is like when you see a guy that, and then he did it in the press conference too, because he was like, yeah, like.
And also, Brian Daboll was screaming at Bowen on the sideline.
Yeah.
Right. That to me, that's the biggest eye popping thing, that Bowen might get axed next, you know, this week or if another. See, the thing is, Brian Daboll is kind of like running out of time, right?
Because he's running out of cards to play.
He's out. He's like, out of time.
You can't now, like, if you fire a defensive coordinator, like, yeah, you're scapegoating that guy. But that doesn't mean he doesn't deserve to get fired.
But you know what, though? Like, you could make the argument up until this week, like, okay, if Bowen gets fired and the Giants stink, like, they, you know, the fans want blood and Bowen is not long for this team anyway, and Daboll may not be long for this team anyway. At this point, you have to get rid of him to placate your players. Like, you have
the
best part of your defense now calling him out. The head coach is yelling at him on the sideline. As much juice as a guy like Jackson Dart and Cam Scadabo bring to this team, Bowen is sucking it out on the back end. And you just have to make a move. You really do.
Yeah.
Andre Patterson call the defense for the rest of the year, because we had this conversation.
What you said is like, it's not about Daboll's like job security. Like, it's about like the players probably are not buying
anymore. And I mean, they don't want him. Dude, no one wanted this guy. People forget. When Wink was gone, Bowen was legitimately like their fifth choice. Like, no one else wanted the job. They interviewed whoever they could, because the assumption was the
fifth known choice.
He was correct. Exactly. Choice. So there's probably more. Like, and no one wanted Bowen. No one wanted to come coach for the Giants, because the assumption was, okay, they don't have their quarterback yet. This team is fucking ass. Daniel Jones is still the quarterback, and this coach is going to get fired. The GM's going to get fired. I'm not hitching my job security to this wagon. It's common sense. Like, everyone here would do the same thing if they were in that position. So he wound up with Bowen. And at the end of the year, you have John Mara publicly saying that the defense sucked ass. But because the head coach is on the hot seat and the GM's on the hot seat going into year four, and no one has any idea if Jackson Dart's going to pan out or not, none of them have the equity internally to say, ah, man, I'm going to choose my third defensive coordinator in four seasons. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, they got stuck with Bowen for a bunch of bullshit political reasons. But at this point, you have to rip the Band-Aid off. The players don't want this. The fans don't want this. I don't think the head coach wants this. Bowen's not long for this team. Like, after that reaction from Brian Burns in the tunnel in the locker room, like, there's no justifiable reason to keep this guy around. Let Andre Patterson call the defense for the rest of the season and be done with it. Like, if you lose next week, you're 2-6. You're not going anywhere fast. You have your fucking little Jordan Humphrey and Wandale Robinson as your wide receivers. Like, it is what it is. Like, it's cool. Like, you found your quarterback, I think. We'll talk about him in a little bit. Like, that's what this season is about at this point. You guys fucking blew it before we're even at the halfway mark by not starting Jackson Dart week one, because he probably wins, I would say, probably the Commanders game. You probably win the Dallas game. And you should have won this game had you found a goddamn kicker and a defensive coordinator who's not a fucking bozo. So listen, again, this is the theme of the episode. You couldn't do the easy thing. And so now you're in this position. Now we have to ride it out. All of us together, maybe not Shane Bowen, but the rest of us.
I think if they make the move, I don't think it's going to be Andre Patterson, who surprisingly doesn't. I think it's going to be Mark Quinn Emanuel.
I don't think secondary
coach. No, I'm just because he has prior.
Let Nicky Snacks coach the defense. I don't care.
It's giving the end of Varsity Blues, where Paul Walker starts calling the offense because they all turn on John Voight. That's basically the vibe right now with the defense, where your best players realize this is bullshit. The bad player. Hey, man, Puerto Rican Mike Kafka is going to get us a third round pick next year.
Yes, he is.
You got to be careful there. But God, the defense is so bad. It's so bad. And like, it's not enough that they're poorly coached. It's that they have unserious football players. What is Banks doing?
Okay,
for the love of God.
Banks. I have one question about Deontay Banks. Help me understand this. Evan Neal can't be active on game days, right? Even when they have like interior offensive line injuries. But Deontay Banks can. And I just don't understand what, like,
I was yelling and screaming about this 2 weeks ago.
You were.
About how they don't trust him to play, and yet they were putting him on the field for the most important downs. the third downs, the most important downs, the downs you really want to get a stop. Because for Shane Bowen, if you don't know, when you get the stop on third down, most of the time depends on the flow of the game. The other team's going to punt. You're going to get the ball back, right? So we're going to put probably our worst cornerback out there for those situations. Makes a ton of sense. Last week, they rectified that. Fewer snaps. Great. They win the game. Now they've got injuries. Javon Holland goes out. Paulson Adebo goes out. The second Deontay Banks comes in the game, it's fucking Bo Nix.
Blood in the water. It's blood in the water.
Oh my God. They smell it. And it's not just in the past game where he was atrocious. And for whatever reason, he can't tackle. Every single fucking run defense play, he's taking some bullshit inside angle. He's getting lost. He's getting owned. It looks like he's just not even trying. It's mind-boggling. Weiss, you just said it. If you can't trust the guy in any situation, then he should not be dressed on game days. Go find someone else. Go find someone else. That's it. It's not as easy a position to just pick up a guy off the street, but literally anybody else. I can't watch this anymore. I don't even think this guy is tradable for someone else's roster for a seventh round pick or something like that.
It's very simple. Like, if you can't trust him to play a snap, to play a series, to play a quarter, to play a game, then don't tell me he's like you need him for depth.
Like, exactly.
Like that's not a depth. Like a depth player is like Art Green, like their other backup corner where they can come in. Like, and again, I want to go back to the summer. Like when the training camp started, Deontay Banks was the other cornerback outside of Paulson Adebo. He sucked so much, and Cordell Flott played so like much better that they had no choice. Like they couldn't just like lie anymore. It was the same thing with Evan Neal and Greg Van Roan. Like it was obvious that Greg Van Roan was better than Evan Neal. And it's then the season starts, and you talk about the rotation thing with again the most. I've thought about this for a while. Like what are some of the dumbest things I've ever seen coaches do? I have never, like you said, on third down to play a guy that you don't trust to play on first and second down.
Bro, it's insane. But the craziest part about it is like the beat writers are tweeting about it during the games. They're like, okay, like it's third down. Like Deontay Banks is coming in. Like the coaches will talk about like using him in situ.
He's the opposite of a closer. He's right, whatever the opposite of Edwin Diaz is.
It was like almost normalized. To the point where we have to sit down and think about it, and we're just like, wait a second, this is fucking crazy.
Yeah. It's like, what?
Wait, like, third down is when you bring in your extra player, like when you bring in your pass rushing specialist, like you bring in your extra good players, not your worst players.
Not your worst players.
Again, it really makes you think, like, wait, am I stupid?
Right. It's like, what am I missing here?
Like, we're not playing. This guy on first and second down.
They're professional gaslighters. They were gaslighting us into thinking.
I don't even know what gaslighting means.
Smart move. Because the Giants have gaslit you so much, you're lost in your own head.
Yeah, I don't understand why the players really don't have a lot of faith in him. The coaches don't have a lot of faith in him. I don't know why the rotation thing was going on. I don't know whose call that was. I don't think it was just a Shane Bowen thing. I think there was other parties that be that wanted that to happen.
Probably.
I think a lot of it is optics too of like,
hey, first round pick.
Yeah, exactly. But man, oh man, like he came in the game and the Broncos scored 33 points in the fourth quarter. Paulson Adebo got hurt in the third quarter. And it's very, very, very frustrating because I feel like we should be sitting here having a different conversation.
Yeah.
But instead, we're talking about this thing.
We should be talking about how we're about to be 4-4 and competing for the division.
So I think we talked about that. Do you want to segue into the good? Because I think there was some obviously.
No, not yet. Just one quick thing.
Sure.
Why is Jalen Hyatt on this roster?
Hype moments and aura.
Let me ask you a question. I'm going to name you four guys. And I want you to tell me their purpose on the roster.
Okay.
Russell Wilson, Deontay Banks, Jalen Hyatt, and Evan Neal.
Well, Evan Neal. Do you want my reasons or like like the rationale of why they're the here from the team's perspective.
The rationale without mentioning first round pick or anything like that.
Well, then I can't do it. Russell Wilson's here because they didn't know that they were going to be able to draft Jackson Dart. So, I mean, is what it is. Okay. The real question there is why was he starting week one? Not necessarily why he's here. Who is number two? Deontay Banks. Deontay Banks is here because he's a first round pick and Joe Shane doesn't want to admit his failure. Third one is Jalen Hyatt. Genuinely couldn't tell you why the fuck he's here. That effort on the deep ball that could have probably put the game away was fucking pitiful. I tweeted the screenshot of Kayshon Booty catching virtually the exact same pass from Drake May, who made a much better effort, and it was in the end zone and it was for a touchdown. Jalen Hyatt can fuck right off. Evan Neal, he's here because he's a first round pick. You're asking me? Don't know why. They won't dress him on game day. Fucking cut him. And who was the last guy?
That was it. That was the four.
Oh, I thought it was five. Whatever. All right, let's go to the good. Jackson Dart is him.
You think so?
Yeah.
Can I illustrate how good I think he played? I think that game-winning drive play was the worst scoring drive that he had in the game.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think he was just chucking the ball up when I think
he was. It got hard for him. I appreciate the gunslinger mentality from him, especially as a rookie. Like, bro, if you're going to do it now. Like, learn what you can and can't get away with in this league. I think that's perfectly fine. That interception that he threw
is terrible.
Was terrible. It is terrible. Inexcusable.
It was terrible, but when I watched the play, like, there were so many things wrong with that entire sequence. Number one, the Giants did run pass.
I was just about to say that. But they continued to do it after the interception, which is what pissed me off more. Like, you want to like try to kill some clock. All right, fine. Like, you got Cam Scadabo, like, you can run. That's fine. Like, that, you want to make that part of your game, especially late. You want to kill clock on the road. Fine. I got no issue with that. But you have a gunslinger. And to just shell up after one mistake, like the only bad mistake he made all game. Like, he had some questionable throws, don't get me wrong. I'll say, like, the only consequential bad mistake that he had all game. To then, like, shell up and go run pass even again after that and just be super predictable in your play calling, I can't deal with that. I really can't. Part of the reason they lost the game, in my opinion.
I agree. That play calling on those two back-to-back drives they ended up punting was such, again, you want to throw the ball on first down. Run a quick play action, see if you can get a 4 or 5 yard completion.
You're using your tight ends early in the game.
Yeah. It's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? What is this? Run pass, punt. Then it's run pass again. Run pass interception, run pass punt. It's like, man, this is not like, you got to help your young quarterback out in certain situations.
Yeah. And the play calling was not helping.
And they didn't run the ball great today. And Dart was still pretty good, which I think that's one of the real indicators of a guy you can semi-depend on. The running game was very inefficient. Tracy had a decent game. He didn't have a lot of touches, but Scadabo was a lot of 2 and 3 yard carries, not a lot of room out there. I mean, 15 pass attempts for 280 yards. They were slinging it around. They hit some shots. And that's how you beat a good pass rushing team, is you got to make them at least respect your ability to throw the ball. And they did that, which is what's all the more frustrating about this. He was good today and they should have won this game, and instead we're arguing about the third corner and the kicker because they're run by idiots. Like you said before, Ethan, am I stupid? What am I not seeing here? You have a quarterback who is playing really well, who's ahead of schedule. You know, we were saying probably week 8, week 10 is when he gets the reins, and he's been actively good. He is helping you with no neighbors, with a bunch of twos and threes and two blocking tight ends. They're moving the ball against a good defense. Denver is a great defense.
The best in the league on the road.
And
even though their pass rushers are big time bitches, like,
yeah, they are
active this week, and the whole deleting tweets, like, Nick Bonito is still really, really good. Yeah. I lost a little respect for him. Cause I'm like, how can you, like, you tweet something, stick to it, man, say it with your chest out.
Yeah, really.
Like, you're going to delete a tweet, and then he deleted another one immediately after the game too.
And he's DMing fans too. It's like, grow up.
Yeah, man. That's not alpha pass rusher. You know, you got to be putting lotion on during post-game press conference. But yeah, go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're fine. No, it's just, it sucks because Dart is giving you something you didn't think you were going to get. Like, we watched those first 2 weeks of Russell Wilson, and I was genuinely like, is there a point to this season? Because if Russ can't move the ball, what's Dart going to do? The offense is poorly schemed. And as we've read over the last few weeks, friend of the show, Dan Duggan, wrote that article about Ole Miss. They're just lifting the Ole Miss offense for plays that work for him. And they are putting him in a position to succeed. They are doing so much of the hard work now. And it is just infuriating. The run pass thing is ridiculous, especially when you're not running the ball well. If you're running the ball well, it's a different conversation. But today, it was tough sledding on the ground. Denver's physical at the line. They got good linebackers. And you piss this game away because I forget who said it. I don't remember who had said it on Twitter, but the entire Dable regime run has been trying not to lose games and just trying to hold on and trying to hold on. And that's why they're losing these games, because they are doing everything in their power not to win. They are giving teams opportunities to hang around. And it's funny, at 20, I think whatever it was, 26-3, whatever, the Chargers were getting smoked too. And I was watching the game with one of my friends who's a Charger fan. We were watching both games, and we know how football goes. But one of those games was going to flip. One of the games in the 4 o'clock window was going to flip. It was just a matter of which one. And Herbert got his shit pushed in today and still threw for 400 yards. And I thought it would be the Chargers who were going to come back, not Denver. But here we are sitting here. And
Chargers have been dreadful.
The other thing is, I digress. Dable's living a lot off of that, you know, first game going for two to win the game thing. Like, he's been a super conservative and inconsistent too. Like, that's the one thing I hate. Like, if you're inconsistent, you're inconsistent. But there'll be times where he'll go for it, not go for it, kick a field. Like that to me is, again, another sign where it's like, I don't know. I think this guy's just making it up as he goes along. But you talked about the run game. Like, that, the run pass, it was 2 yard run, 3 yard run, interception. Then they get the ball back and it goes no gain, 2 yard run, incompletion. It's a very...
Especially reactive. When you're throwing the ball well. That's the other thing. Like, they were throwing the ball reasonably well today, and you could justify throwing on first down.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Yeah.
Did this put the kibosh on trading for a receiver?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I can explain why.
I mean, I know what you're...
I think that they are... Even Brian Daboll himself, I think they are surprised at how far along this dude. I don't want to call him a kid. I hate people that call like young players kids.
Nah, he's a kid.
This young dude is far more along than they thought he would be, and I think they want to. They don't. It's not necessarily like expedite it. It's more so make sure he has the resources.
I get it. And listen, anyone they trade for is going to have terms, so it's not going to be a 1 year thing. But it's like, you know, do they even have permission from the powers that be? Like,
I think Joe Shane is safe. I don't think he's going to get fired.
It's fucked up.
I think he's tied to this quarterback, even though Brian Daboll is
the wrong decision. Really is, but whatever. Just was just curious what you guys thought about that.
Since, what do you think? What do you think about the Jalen Waddle thing?
I think it's real.
He's like, he's following Giants, like he's following Cam Scataboo and Jackson
Dart. No, it's real. It's just a matter of, I mean, McDaniel's a fucking dead man walking.
I'm surprised he didn't get fired after the game today. He might get fired tomorrow. We might wake up tomorrow.
I think it's coming. It's coming.
It's over. Tua's going to get deactivated. They're going to run with Ewers.
That's what I heard. That they were. I think I texted you guys that I heard that.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it because it was your info. So you mean you could feel free to share.
Well, I think I'm a little vindicated. I heard that they're not happy with Tua.
Oh, he's not playing that well.
No,
that locker room does, the players don't like him. Coach is frustrated with him. I heard that like there's going to be a fire sale in Miami. Like, you're going to see them start offsetting a lot of these things. And I think it's to me, what vindicated me with that was like they made Quinn Ewers their backup quarterback.
I saw that. He played today. He got in the game today. Yeah.
So I was like, that's all that they're ramping him up to be.
They picked him up in Dynasty this morning off that news.
Yeah. I did too.
Yeah.
I think so I know a lot of people are like, it's going to be like a second and whatever. I'm interested to see, first of all, if Miami does move him, I don't know what it will cost. I don't think the Giants are giving up a first round pick, and I think they're going to try to avoid giving up a second round pick. They might want to dip into 2027. But I absolutely would love Jalen Waddle, for the record.
Oh, yeah. Waddle's
good. Depends on who's here next year.
Waddle is a good football player. I have no qualms about that. He'd fit well with neighbors. You'd have a good one, too. Yeah. You could slide Wandale inside. You have a nice dynamic there.
And maybe the Giants have an offensive coordinator who's very familiar with him and knows how to use him.
But here's the thing with Daboll, right, Ethan? And again, I don't want to, like, I'm not trying to hear to defend him, right? But, like,
he's doing
a good job with the young quarterback. Like, he is putting him in position to make
plays. I don't care. There's other coaches that can do well with young quarterbacks, and
I'm not
fuck up everything else.
But I just have this vision of them locking him in to a coordinator that is like Jason Garrett and just completely ruins him. Not that I'm saying Brian Daboll deserves to come back. I'm just saying, like, it could get worse. Like, they could.
I think Jackson Dart is – I think he's that good.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think he has a very high floor because of his athleticism. I think that gives you a lot of opportunities to be competitive, even if he's not incredible. I mean, shit, right. Trevor Lawrence got $300 million and he's just a pretty good athlete with an okay arm. And like, I still think he's decent, but like, he's not on the trajectory we thought he was, but he's a great athlete and he's got a decent arm. So he'll hang around for a while. I think that's your worst case with Dart. I think the athleticism gives him a high floor. I think he's got a solid arm. It's just a matter of, can the tools all line up and can you get them to succeed? I mean, guys don't really flop as first round pick quarterbacks anymore unless you're put in like the worst possible situation imaginable. But I think Dart will be fine. I'm not really worried about him. Cam Ward has great traits. I get it. Like, I Kim understand.
Kim Ward, no, Ethan, come on. He's in a tough situation, man. You can't.
That's a terrible team, to be fair. That is terrible.
You got to be fair. The guy gets. I mean, he has no offensive.
Okay. Line. First of all, I absolutely do not have to be fair. Second of all, he stinks.
Come on.
He doesn't stick. His arm is incredible. His arm is incredible.
Bro, he's Dwayne Haskins.
He might end up being what you claim he is, but you can't victory lap that right now.
I'm going to.
No, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's not fair.
No.
His head coach gets fired five games into his career?
When the biggest shit for brains on Giants Twitter were victory lapping, like, I can't even call them good Michael Penix games last year. And, like, whoever else. I can absolutely.
Week one.
Yeah. No, and week one, JJ McCarthy.
One thing we have to say is, like, we have to stop this anointing players after like six games.
I agree with you. And you know why? Because my patience, especially with someone like Bo Nix, paid off. Because as I said last year, we were seeing him at a ceiling and he hasn't been good this year.
Jaden Daniels has not even looked good this year.
He's been hurt. He's had two pretty bad injuries.
Even when he was playing,
his number one receiver today was Luke McCaffrey before he
come
got
on. Too. I mean,
thanks, Nick. I started this week.
I did too.
No, you know what's funny though? I started Christian McCaffrey and Luke McCaffrey, and they combined for 35.6 fantasy points in half PPR today. So I can say that at least
35 of them.
All of them.
One more thing about Dart. You talk about the floor. I love the fact that he's able to like put mistakes behind him and just like
Which is why it's frustrating, like you just said, like after the pick, they just go run pass again. Like, no, let the fucking guy ball.
Yeah.
Get the ball to Wandale.
I want to go back to the Jalen Waddle conversation, the wide receiver trade. What do you think, Ethan? Like, do you want this to happen? Like, any trade. I don't want a Jacoby Myers.
I don't know, man. Listen, I keep going back and forth. No, I don't want Jacoby. I go back and forth on the trading for a receiver thing because everyone likes to focus on like Olave.
You brought up the Jalen Hyatt thing. Like, I don't think that you cannot play Jalen Hyatt. So like,
you can't play him.
Yeah, you can't.
No, but like I go back and forth on the Jalen Waddle thing. Like I was super high on him coming out of Bama. Absolutely loved him. Would have been thrilled with if the Giants were have drafted him. There's no doubt he's like he's a really good receiver. And I keep having to remember that like his role here is going to be the two. Like he's here to be the one while Malik is out and whatever. But like next year, like he is the wide receiver too. So like I'm trying to keep that in perspective. But like maybe I just I have some bias, but like this guy's always hurt. Like it feels like every time he gets tackled, he's limping off the field and missing snaps, and he's got like a moderate injury history.
No, he's played like I think he's missed 9 games his entire career, right? Something like that.
Jalen Waddle. I don't know. I feel like he's always got an injury designation. It was like a joke like the last 2 years that like every time he takes a hit, he's limping off the field.
15 games last year, 14 the year before that, 17 and 16. So,
all right. Yeah. So maybe I just have a bias against him.
He's definitely dinged up. He has a lot of questionables and he plays.
Yeah. He's always
a guy. He is dinged up. He's a smaller guy. You know, he's only like 180, 185 pounds. So that's a real concern. That's valid.
It's just like, I don't know. Like, we have Malik.
Right.
We do. We have our quarterback
coming off ACL.
We have our running back. Understood. I'm not saying that I'm not nervous about that, but like, you know, young enough guy, you hope that, you know, by, I don't know, at the worst midway through next season, like he's his old self. You hope, you know, worst case, like next year, he's just okay and good. And then the next year he's back. So we see that all the time with players on off the ACL. They need a gap year.
Can I ask you a question?
Great. Can I finish my point real quick?
Go ahead. Cause I'm going to ask something. I'm going to tee you off or something.
Okay. To me, it really depends on the price. Like, I know, like, one of the things that you were throwing around in our group text was, like, a second and a third. And, like, even if that second is the 27 second, it's, like, they already have, like, when healthy, a top five receiver. And I know he's still young, and I know that, like, I don't know. There's something rubs me the wrong way about spending those assets on, like, Jalen Waddle when, like, every year we see, like, three receivers go in the first round that are, like, this guy's an alpha. Like, you know, Tet McMillan went eighth. You know, this upcoming draft is, you know, who's the Ohio State guy? Tate.
Carnell Tate.
Yeah.
Carnell Tate. Jordan Tyson.
Denzel Boston.
Yeah. Mekhi Lemon. Like Rutgers. Ian Strong. I don't know where he's projected, but like I've seen some of him. He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like there are guys like you can get with like a first or a second round pick, keep them on the rookie contract. And it's like,
That's the one reason I don't want to trade for Waddle is that the next contract is going to suck because like wide receiver market is just out of control now because it's catching up to
his contract. But here's my thing with the Waddle thing, right? Is for every like all the great teams have multiple skill players that are all.
Awesome. Oh, you have to
100%. But I'm just saying like my preference would be like just go draft one as opposed to taking one who's cap hitting, you know, was $33 million in the last year of the deal. And then you're going to have to re-sign him. And then you're going to have to deal with Malik's contract. And then by that, like, I would just rather draft. Yeah. Like, you have a lot of money tied up in your defensive line. You have a lot of money tied up in Andrew Thomas. You're going to have to extend the Luminor.
Well, I think they're very good salary cap-wise.
I think so, too. But it's like, okay, in a vacuum, like, would you rather have Jordan Tyson on a rookie contract or would you rather have Jalen Waddle?
I mean, obviously Tyson, but that's going to cost me a top 10 pick that I'm not guaranteed to have.
I think at this point, it's pretty much you're going to be picking around
know.
There.
I don't know, man. I think this dude can win some games, man.
Maybe.
The
coach, you know, as much as this guy can win some games, the coach can lose them.
I agree with you, yeah. But I think Jackson Dart's going to keep them in games. I think they're going to win some games that – are going to surprise people. They're also going to lose some games that surprise people too. But I just think for this year and going forward, I think Jalen Waddle would be a great fit for their offense and what they try to do. I'm a huge Jalen Waddle fan, especially coming out. Him and Devontae Smith were really two guys I was hoping one of them would land. I think I remember going back, Waddle was like toward the end of the draft season. It was like Waddle's going to go in the top 10 and Devontae Smith's going to be the one that falls out. But Look, I really think that if you're telling me like if I can get him for a conditional three that can go up to a two in 2027, I think I'm doing that any day of the week. I think it gives the Giants a really, really good player. And the thing about the draft is, yeah, you could get yourself a Jordan Tyson in the first round, but you could also screw yourself and get, you know, a Xavier Legette. You know, like it's not a lock that you're going to hit these picks. And I understand, like, everyone's like, oh, you know, you can just draft the guy. It's like, no, you can't draft the guy, as we've seen here. You can't just draft a right tackle and Evan Neal. You can't just draft a corner and Deontay Banks. So, I don't know. I'm for this. Maybe it's my bias toward Waddle. I don't really care about salary cap hits in 2028 and 2029.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. What else?
I'm done talking about this game.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of chatter this week. Maybe by the time you're listening, Shane Bowen's fired. Who knows? But that'll do it. We'll talk to you guys next week. Follow us on Twitter, subscribe, and that's it.